Where's the beer, Tom?
What?
The beer. Where's the beer?
I thought you were getting the beer.
You what? No beer? You idiot, Tom. You total idiot. That was your job, you complete moron. You cretin. That's what you are. A total and utter cretin.
It was a joke, Rob. I was joking. It was a Christmas joke.
Oh. I see.
Of course I got the beer. It's from Beer 52. I got 8 specially themed beers, and there are snacks and even an award-winning magazine for just £5.95 postage. I researched it all online. All I had to do was go to beer52.com/peep.
That sounds like a lovely case of beers. I'm sorry I flew off the handle a bit.
That wasn't very Christmassy.
No, it wasn't. I apologise. So if I wanted to get my own free case of beer, how would I go about doing that?
Well, to get your first free case of beers, simply head to beer52.com/peep. You'll get 8 specially themed beers, a couple of snacks, and that award-winning magazine. All you need to do is pay the £5.95 for postage.
Brilliant. Cheers.
Hi, I'm David Mitchell, and you're listening to Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs.
Hello and welcome to Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs, a podcast all about discussing and reviewing the British sitcom Peep Show. My name's Tom Harrison, and as always, I'm joined by Rob Graham.
Hello!
And we are approaching the halfway point of our final series now. How are you doing, Rob?
Yeah, I'm good. I've not fallen into the trap of going hunting for petrol just yet, like everybody else in this damned country seems to be doing. Yeah, it's we always have something to discuss at the beginning of these episodes, and definitely this week is, if you're in the UK, although apparently it's a global problem, but I think in the UK it's got worse by the media reporting it is, we're running low on petrol, the whole country is, so if you're stuck at home because you've run out of fuel and that's forcing you to listen to Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs, then fair play.
Yeah, thankfully I filled up, I almost didn't, but I filled up like 2 days before, you know, reports started coming out that it was going crazy. So purely by chance, I managed to kind of avoid this crisis, but it's absolutely insane the way people are behaving. But hey-ho, that's the state of the world we live in now.
Yeah, I mean, I went out Saturday morning, I got forced into it, my wife badgered me enough that I went out and topped my car up. I had quite a lot anyway, to be fair, but yeah, we're all set for the next couple of weeks should the world crumble.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, as long as we're okay with our fuel. Hope everyone else listening is okay, including our wonderful patrons. Dodgy segue there, but would you like to give our lovely patrons their shout outs, Rob? Got a couple of new ones.
Yeah, we have. We actually had one of our latest patrons joined about 12 hours before we started recording this. So you got in just in time. So I'm just going to give you all a shout out. I'm going to try and do it in some form of chronological order. So starting from our original patrons, we have got Darren Friedrichs, Robert Horvath, Dave Pink, Mike Kavanagh, Trisha Retenzia, Laurie Johnson, Daniel Thompson, Andrew Mason, Doug Simpson, Alex Watson, Joel Johansson Byberg, John Fraser, Michael Collins, Toby Irving, Jessica Isler, Tim Chamberlain, Jonathan Gardner, John C. Ralston, Stuart Hill, Ash Krishna, Isaac Marley Morgan, John Barker, Dee Bizzle, Sarah McDaniel, Steve Morano, Olivia Kalmus-Hoy, Benjamin Price, Eleanor Wall, Simon Darlington, Nick Howard, Jason Martin, Justin Dunleavy, Stephen Daranchetti, Isla Skokowska, Vijay Bal, David Butler, Eric Lenz, Adam Dawn, Rob Craik, Roy Robinson, Caroline Murray, Sean Ronan-Smith, Joe Sims, Michael McQueen, Jamie from Up and Running, Gareth Stevens and Drew Allen. And I believe Gareth Stevens and Drew Allen are our two newbies. You've joined since we recorded last, maybe not since we released our last episode, but definitely since we recorded last. So welcome to both of you. And please, if I'm saying your name wrong, please just send us a message and let me know, because I'm sure I'm butchering a couple of your names, and I would hate for you to be going, I pay those guys £5 a month and they say my name wrong every single time. So please just shout us out on Patreon or on any other social media channel if I am butchering your name.
Yeah, I suppose with about approaching 50 patrons now, so yeah, chances are there is probably is someone where we're getting it wrong. So yeah, that's absolutely right. If we are, you know, doing you a disservice, then we definitely don't mean to. So yeah, get in touch and we will fix that ASAP. So this week we are going to be taking a look at episode 3 of series 9, of course, which is called Threeism. And I think we have agreed, we've mentioned this episode specifically a few times throughout the run of this podcast. And while series 9 tends to get a bit of a bashing from fans, I think most people will agree there's always going to be a, you know, a certain section that will voice their criticisms or whatever. But I think most people will agree that this is the highlight of series 9. So I think what we'll do is, I know Rob, you've been collecting a lot of listener opinions and things, so we're going to get into those. So I'll start by reading the synopsis, and then we will get into our impressions and the listener impressions. Does that sound good with you?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've collated more listener thoughts on this episode than I have collectively for all the other episodes we've recorded in the previous 2 years. So you're in for an interesting ride when you listen to these.
Okay, well, for now, let's start with the synopsis and then we will dive into all of those. So here we go. Here's Threeism. After finally realizing that Dobby isn't the one for him, Mark resorts to cyberstalking to find the woman of his dreams. And after 7 series apart, his search reintroduces us to nearly former fling April. Meanwhile, Jeremy's new relationship with Joe isn't quite enough for Jez, so he decides to also take things with Megan to the next level. And when a strange dinner party brings them all together, it all starts to unravel. So, shall we start with our lovely listeners and what they thought of it, and then we can kind of discuss our opinions as we go through theirs?
Yeah, I mean, I put this out on near enough every social media channel we've got, so we have got a lot of opinions. So first of all, I'll start off by saying there was a real 50-50 split. People either love this episode or hate it. And like you said at the beginning, it's one of those episodes where I think because Series 9 takes such a bashing, the people who love it, I think part of the reason they love it is because it's a good episode within what they consider to be a weaker series. But other people who don't like it seem to not like it because it's reflective of the poor quality of Series 9. So I'll start off with a few. Please, if you're listening and you did offer a comment, I've had about 200 people come back to me with opinions today, so obviously we're about to read them all out. So this is from Haunting Mortgage on Reddit. And they say, I know people love this episode, but I'll be contrary and say that I think it's overrated. The farcical stuff with Mark and Jez is really funny, but it's one of those stories where if you look at it closely, the whole thing falls apart. April and Angus go over to a stranger's house for a dinner party. They accept all of the insanity that Mark throws at them without so much as a questioning look. They then have a fight in the middle of a dinner party where they confess their secrets to Mark. Angus even stays over. He met Mark literally an hour ago. The lack of any sort of reality takes me out of it. In my opinion, it's mostly the fault of placement within the season. If Mark and April started hanging out in an earlier episode and built up some kind of relationship, then I could understand her and Angus going over and accepting all the madness. Even if the bookstore scene was in a previous episode, it would set the stage for this a little better. I don't think Peep Show needs to exist in the real world, but just like how they waterboard Jerry, it transcends believability, and this person can't really look past it. He does then finish it off by then saying, but of course I'm nitpicking. It's still really funny. And the scene where Jez writes on Mark's eyes is pure joy. So that's sort of one of the more, I mean, it's a very in-depth opinion and it's quite disparaging of the episode. Obviously they bring it back round. NSRE123 on Instagram said it's the strongest episode of the weakest season. Whilst it does verge on the sillier side of things, the comedy is good enough to overlook this. Mark's descent into madness is great and the dueling love triangles are funny. Special shout out to the fruit corner scene for being endlessly quotable and having some excellent visual comedy. Mark putting down the fruit corner always kills me. And this is one of my favourite bits of interaction we've had from McConley Gills Pod. again, apologies if I've butchered your name. It's the youngest, dumbest, full of cummiest episode of them all. My favourite. However, I disagree that it's the most off the rails episode. It's got fun and madness, but I never have to try very hard to suspend my disbelief for what's going on in threeism. Getting into polyamory and hosting a creepy dinner party for a married woman are way more in character for Mark and Jez than killing, burning and eating a dog ever was. Which I think is, yeah, completely true. Hermione Cameron said, controversially, I think it might be my least favourite episode of Peep Show, although it has got its moments of magic. I found it a little too farcical, which I think is quite a common thread through a lot of these comments. I won't read out all of these endlessly, but I'll just read a couple more. Barry McGuigan said, probably the best episode of Series 9, almost a role reversal of Mark with him adopting a Jez-style tactic to split April and Angus, whereas Megan and Joe unknowingly both sleep with Jez. Having two storylines run concurrently like that in a single setting is absolute genius, and that's one of the things that I wanted to touch on. And Alex Apati, this isn't a serious point, but he just said, I assume you're going to at least try the water, rum, vinegar, lettuce and salt cocktail at some point whilst recording the podcast.
So
there's plenty of interaction and plenty of thoughts on this episode. I think it's really funny, the Facebook episode, the Facebook comments about this episode are generally a lot more positive than anywhere else. So yeah, I mean, I agree with what whoever it was, Barry, was saying. I think having two such strong storylines, not only running concurrently, but running in the same setting. They're happening at the same time whilst Mark and Jez and the people in either one of their plots are sitting with them is just absolute genius.
Yeah, I think that the main thing I had down, it's interesting because I think the first comment that we had was that it was really like it all falls apart. And I can kind of see that to the extent that there is a lot of just ridiculous antics that take place in this episode. But I actually think at its core, it's one of the better like constructed and like structured episodes because you're right, you have these two what should be very different series of events, very separate storylines, but they come together through this dinner party, which is quite, you know, a simple and, you know, tried and tested, like, formula for, you know, sitcoms and things, getting everyone around for dinner, whatever. But I think getting all of these characters who you would never normally get around the table together, because of Mark's deceit and trying to get, you know, April on side, then it's, oh no, there's the husband, all this, he arrives, and it's all, I find that all quite believable, and the way that Mark then kind of traps Jeremy in his own kind of personal nightmare. I think those pieces all slot together quite well. I think it's the, you know, it's the dinner and the cocktail and the makeup and things that kind of take it to, you know, a weird other level. But I think on the whole, I do think it is a well-constructed episode.
Yeah, I mean, I really like this episode. I've touched on it, like I said, hundreds of times about how it's up in my upper echelons of my favourite episodes. And you're completely right. Like, the way it's constructed is fantastic. And I think almost the what our listeners have described as, like, the farcical elements almost make it that little bit better because it's so, some of the bits are really slapstick, like the laughing as he's putting the eye makeup on and the writing the words on his eyes is slapstick, but it almost seems to have a place. I think people hate on this series because they think Series 9 is weak and it just is indicative of the rest of Series 9, whereas I don't think Series 9 is necessarily the best series. But the microcosm, I'm not sure microcosm is really the right word, but the fact that everything basically happens within the flat, all like this amazing dinner party just happens within the flat, and we just see everything just tumbling and tumbling and tumbling is what makes it a really great episode.
Yeah, I think the fact that, yeah, the vast majority of this takes place in the flat and you just have a lot of characters in there doing, you know, this wonderful kind of set piece. You don't see too often, like, that many people in the flat all together. And like I said, I just think it's very well put together in the end. And I think it, even though you are stuck in the flat for the last like 10 minutes or so, probably. I think it still carries itself really well, and you kind of don't notice that, oh, we're still here.
Yeah, and I think the people, and there are a fair few people who don't like this episode. There was somebody who referred to it as the point that Peep Show jumped the shark, which I'm not sure I agree with, because I don't think there's ever really a point where I feel Peep Show jumps the shark. And I know we talked about that with the stag do episode, whether that was a jumping of the shark. But I get what people's reservations are about it. I can see that people think, yeah, the ridiculous nature of what happens is making it weaker. But I think people, you're having to really dig into the sort of the minutiae of nitty gritty parts of realism and whatever else to find a negative about it. As an actual, like you said, as an actual set piece, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think the dinner scene is like an all-time classic for Peep Show, in my opinion. There's just so much happens in it. I'll always remember it. And I think it's interesting because I'm one of the few that I'm not too keen on episodes like Sectioning and Shrooming that kind of go like super weird, and that's part of that. Like Peep Show often gets kind of, it descends into the mad, doesn't it, quite often, and that's part of the DNA of the show. But I don't know, there's something about this one, I just think it clicks, and it won't click for everyone. Like I say, Shrooming and Sectioning, it's a couple of my least favorite episodes of Peep Show, but in this instance it just works.
Yeah, and I know like certain people have said like the whole Jeremy, like, and we talked about this in the last episode about Jeremy going by and sleeping with Joe. Obviously, he slept with him for the first time in the last episode. Was sort of that it was really unrealistic, and I was like, but the whole time it's been built up to, it's been alluded to. So I'm not sure that's a reason to dislike the episode. I don't feel like Jeremy sleeping with a guy is unrealistic.
No, not at all. I think if you couldn't see Jeremy being by, then I don't know, I think maybe, without being rude, I'm not sure if you've been paying close enough attention to Jeremy as a character. There's a great line that kind of sums him up in this episode, that it's just, he's looking for the sacred connection, and to find it, he's willing to fuck any member of the human race. And it's just like, yeah, that's Jez. So I totally, that line, while being hilarious, I found very believable. I think he's just he's like a hump machine, isn't it? He's a sexer, in his own words. Like, that's what he does.
He's a slutty sugar puff, as Mark calls him.
Yeah, so it's, and there are references before, like you say, way back, series 3, series 4 or something, where he tells Sophie, like, oh, blimey, I've slept with more men than that. That's just one of them. There are several others that, yeah, so it's totally believable to me that Jez could be bi or whatever. Like, in this, he really doesn't want to put a label on it, doesn't it? Much to Mark's sort of dismay, he kind of is desperate to put a label on it so he can kind of process it better.
That's another point as well, though. Some of Mark's sort of deadpan responses to Jez in this episode are great, aside from the way he behaves at the dinner party. Just like the whole thing around the, if you had a Wikipedia page, which of course you don't, it's just fantastic. But rather than dancing around all of the sort of general topics, shall we dive into the actual episode itself?
Yes, yeah, let's get started. I think we've rambled long enough. So this threeism starts with Mark struggling to sleep. So we're with him in his bedroom, and the reason for his lack of sleep is we can hear the sounds of Jeremy and Joe having sex through the walls.
Once upon a time, I might have woken to the sound of a song thrush. Now it's a couple of guys pounding the living daylight out of each other. I mean, it's fine. It's just, when Jeremy had sex with women, I hated the noise, but at least there was something in it for me. Now it's like there are two Jeremys in there humping each other. That would be his dream.
Am I the only person who's ever found it really weird that Mark does this whole thing of, like, oh, there would be something in it for me? Like, ultimately, regardless of whether he can hear a woman having sex, like, he still knows that woman is having sex with Jeremy.
Yeah, well, I guess he says there is a little bit of something. I guess it's the fact that he would rather, you know, It's like, I guess it'd be like Mark watching porn, but turning the screen the other way. So there's a little bit of something in it for him, I guess. At least it's not so... I think the fact that, you know, it's Jez and Joe going at it, and this idea that it's that it would be Jez's dream, kind of, that Joe seems to be, from the noises we can hear, is very similar to Jez. And if he probably hates listening to Jeremy have sex, and so if there's another one of him in there, then it's just kind of, there's absolutely nothing. And if, like, it's annoying, but there's not even like a little bit of something to kind of make it more bearable. So it's almost like doubly worse for him.
Yeah, I also enjoy Mark's use of the phrase pounding the living daylights out of each other.
Yeah, oh, it sounds so aggressive, doesn't it? It's like last episode when it's like Jeremy's cock's taking quite the hammering, and you thought, Jesus, what are these two doing? So aggressive.
So Mark is quizzing Jeremy and asking him, he's just saying, just to confirm, like, you're sleeping with Joe on a regular basis now. And just to be clear, if you had a Wikipedia page, which obviously you don't, regardless of how many times you try and put one up, would it say that you were gay or straight? And this is where Jeremy says his sort of fantastic line about looking for the sacred connection, and for that he'll fuck any single member of the human race.
Yeah, it's interesting, this conversation that they're having, because I found it's kind of like this is the conversation, like, that finishes up the heart-to-heart that Jeremy attempted to have in Norfolk with Mark when he was at Supanza's wedding. Like, we never really saw that kind of resolve. But it's interesting to see that Jez is, like, he's completely on board with these feelings he's got towards Joe now, doesn't he? Like, he went from, I can't remember the exact quote, but he was saying, like, I'm not sure if there's maybe, like, a little sense of shame and confusion about it all. But now he just seems like, yeah, him and Joe, totally into it. No shame whatsoever. He's embracing the whole thing. And I think part of it, he's kind of playing up, you know, for Mark, because Mark does seem to be very much like, I need to know. Like, he seems fine with the fact that Jez and Joe are a thing. But Mark's very much a guy who likes to know where he stands. So it's like, what are they? Are they boyfriend and boyfriend? Are they just humping? Like, whatever. And I think Jez takes quite a lot of joy in saying that, you know, oh, I don't fit into your tiny little boxes. And I think he's feeling nice and confident again, kind of a bit more usual Jez. And he seems to be, you know, I think you mentioned several times last week that talking about Jez being sort of sexually, like, his sexuality being fluid. And I think he's kind of got on board with that fully and is embracing it, which is nice to see, because he was quite vulnerable last episode.
Yeah, and Mark is very binary, and I don't mean it in, like, any sort of political sense or anything else, but, like, he's either with somebody or he's not. He's with one person at a time. He dates them or he's not with them. He's in a relationship with them or he's not with them. Like, there's no... He needs to know exactly where he stands at all points. So I think, yeah, like you said, Jeremy doesn't fit into one of Mark's little boxes, because Jeremy just sort of, like, suck and fuck is not a long-term solution, but that is basically what his solution seems to be to things, which Mark can't really comprehend. And I get Mark's perspective there. I'm very much Mark in that situation. I like to know sort of where I stand. I'm quite autistic with that, like, needing to know the rules and regulations of stuff, and, like, it is either this or it's not. It has to be organized, it has to be sorted. But Jeremy then seems really surprised when he's like, asks him, like, did nothing ever happen between you and Pedge in Darty? And Mark then says, I have a long list of regrets, but not being pulled off by Pedge is not one of them, which really surprises me that Jeremy would have thought that Mark would have done something like that.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, I hadn't thought about it from that aspect.
Like, surely knowing Mark, he would be like, you are, like, Superhands describes him, like, you're dick in the vagina, chicken tikka masala, don't trust the Argies. Like, you are so... Obviously, he had that moment where he thought he might be gay or bisexual when the whole being in love with Johnson thing. But surely there hasn't really been any other point when... Jeremy would have considered that Mark might be gay, which I think we would all agree with.
Yeah, and I think the thing with Johnson, I don't think there was really anything in that. I think that was more just he was so infatuated by, he was kind of dazzled by Johnson. I think that led to a lot of confusion. Whereas Jez is, we can essentially, without putting a label like Jeremy wants, he doesn't want a label, but I think we can assume that he's basically, he's bisexual now. Is willing to fuck any member of the human race. I'm not sure if there's a technical term for that. But I think even the fact that he doesn't give Mark that, like you're saying, that Mark always seems to be, yeah, he wants to tick the boxes and things. He's like hungry for like data. Like we joke, and he's aware of it. But the fact that Jeremy kind of doesn't even give him that, I think Jez is kind of taking the piss a little bit. He kind of knows what he's doing, but it's nice to see that he's much more comfortable in his own skin now. He's enjoying himself as well. You can, maybe the fact he's just caught up in like how great it is with Joe and everything, that he's kind of overlooking that someone else, like even like Mark, like the idea of doing something like that is obviously totally alien for Mark. But for Jez, he's kind of just embracing all things sexually fluid. Well, that's horrible way of describing it, but hopefully you know what I mean.
Yeah, and he uses that great metaphor. I say great metaphor.
The thing about sex with a guy, it's like getting your car fixed at the actual dealership. They've got all the codes. You just plug right in. I mean, you like blowjobs, don't you, Mark?
I'm eating a fruit corner, Jeremy.
Of course you do. But what's the most blowjobs you've ever had in one day? Like in the first happy days of a relationship?
One.
Right. Well, my life now is a 24/7 blowjob bonanza.
I very much regret starting this conversation.
Put it this way, I'm moving out and I've got a new address for you to forward my post to, Blowjob City.
Mark uttering the immortal line of, I'm eating a fruit corner, Jeremy.
It's incredible, isn't it? I think it's funny, like, Mark doesn't even like to talk about sex of any kind at the best of times, and that the way that he then just looks down at it, when he's talking about being young, dumb, full of cum or whatever, the way he just at the end of the conversation looks down at it and then just goes, like, I'm done with this now, like I can't possibly have another bite, is just like fantastic from David Mitchell. Like, great bit of physical comedy.
It's a funny one for Mark, because he's not homophobic as far as we're aware, but I think he's just quite old-fashioned, and like the idea, like, If I lived with somebody who was gay, that just wouldn't even really figure into anything for me. Whereas Mark is very conscious. I suppose partly because Jeremy hasn't actively been sleeping with men in the flat for the past 10 years that they've been living together, or the 20 years they've been living together. And now he is. It is now very much like in Mark's face straight away.
Yeah, and I also think, we talked about this, I mentioned it several times last week, that this relationship seems to move pretty quickly. Like, Joe is very forward and kind of, you know, inviting himself around. Like, the way he came round and sort of initiated with Jez with the bottle of wine, just knocking on his door and coming in. He invited himself to stay the night, things like that. So they seem quite relationship-y quite quickly, and clearly, like, Joe is spending quite a lot of time at the flat. So I think to Mark, it's sort of, that's a part of it as well. It's like, hold on, like, I didn't even know this guy like a week ago, and now like he's spending all his time and I'm listening to them having sex every night. Like, it's just a bit, whoa.
Yeah, and they finish this conversation with somewhat of a for them a heart-to-heart moment where,
I really like it, Mark. Do you think it matters if I'm not young, dumb and full of cum?
Oh, no, I mean, you're older and intelligent and full of cum.
Yeah, except I'm not that intelligent because I don't really understand almost any of what the news is about. And I'm not even certain that I'm full of cum.
Oh, I'm sure. How did I get here? I'm sure you're full of cum.
That's nice. Thank you.
There's a wonderful sense of sincerity, isn't there, from Jeremy when he thanks Mark for that. It's kind of like, oh, like, I really needed to hear that today.
Yeah, that's so, the bit he took from it, is that you're still full of cum. Not the, you are intelligent, Jeremy. Like, don't worry about it. The bit he took was that he is still full of cum, which is Jez to a T. But yeah, we move forward to later on in that day, or presumably later on in that day, and we're outside a bookshop. And very quickly we go inside, and before we see Mark, we see a familiar face. Although she's not that familiar, because we only saw her for one episode. But we see April from the Darty days, who is signing a copy of her book, which is called The Conversion of Constantinople, A History of the Christian Invasion of the Ottoman Empire. So right up Mark's street, although I'd imagine... as soon as he realises April's there, he's not really bothered about the book anymore. He is there purely for her.
Yes, in his monologue, he describes her as the one that got away. And I thought it sounds slightly creepier when it, I don't know, coming in Mark's monologue there. I don't know, there was something about it that I thought, the one that escaped. I think maybe she had kind of she dodged a bit of a bullet there, but he's managed to track her down after all these years through intense Googling.
Well, it took me a long time to realise, I've watched this episode loads of times, that he hadn't turned up at a bookstore and she happened to be there. It was only when I watched this back really fairly recently that I was like, oh, he's Googled. I'd missed that line. I was always like, I thought he'd gone to a bookshop and been like, oh my God, it's April.
Oh no, yeah. Who knows how long he's been Googling.
Which is so creepy. But it gets creepier because he then makes a line about when he's talking to her about how he replays the moment in his head nightly. And I'm just like, it's very creepy. And then he says he's going to like read her book, get some wet wipes and have a wanky Byzantine party.
Yeah. Oh,
which is just horrific. Getting creepier and creepier.
Well, there's quite a lot of chopping and changing in these early scenes. So we go from Mark arriving at the book signing and the reading to Jeremy, who's holding another life coaching session with Megan. And shock horror, it turns out that things between Megan and Joe haven't been very good lately, in Megan's own words. They've sort of been drifting a little bit. And she's wanting to get back on track and sort of, she's like, I'm ready to commit. And she kind of wants to have that kind of conversation with Joe. And it leaves Jez in quite an awkward position, obviously, because we all know that he's the cause of all of this. And he's trying to deter her and from kind of making that commitment to Joe, or rather making, like, forcing Joe into committing to her, because obviously it puts his relationship with him at threat. But somehow he manages to quite quickly lead Megan into locking Joe out of the flat. And then before we know it, she's coming on to Jez.
It really surprises me. Like, we talked about this last week with his life coaching tactics of basically saying the opposite of A, what the right advice would be, but also the opposite of quite often what he said in the past. And he basically says to her, yeah, just... like, don't talk about anything. If there's anything bad to happen, don't talk about it. Just brush it under the carpet, get on with it. Which is the worst advice to give anybody who's got any sort of problem.
Yeah.
Like, he's not a therapist. As a life coach, to basically say to somebody, don't talk about it, is never going to help a situation. But yeah, like you said, very quickly, she is locking Joe out of the flat and offering Jez to stay for a glass of wine, which Jeremy's like, oh, she's sexy, artistic and confused. It'd be rude not to.
Yeah. So another goal or notch on Jez's bedpost, but also while breaking one of his many rules, as we don't know whether life coaches swear an oath or whatever, but I'm sure if they do, then Jez has broken it for about the 10th time at this point. So yeah, while they're starting their own affair, just sleeping with both sides of the couple now, Mark has managed to reach the front of the queue at April's book signing.
We studied ancient history at Dartmouth, but that's all ancient history. No.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you.
I love the Ottoman Empire. I think I feel an affinity because some ingeniously savage children at my secondary school called me the sick man of Europe.
Sorry, TMI.
No, I was actually ostracised by some horrible girls who called me Joan of Snark.
Two peas in a fucking pod.
Who should I sign it to?
Mark. Mark Corrigan.
Okay.
Does she recognise me?
Obviously, like, this opening exchange between them is going to be a little bit awkward. Mark, we know, remembers her so clearly. He's gone to the quite extreme lengths of tracking her down online after many years. And interestingly, she doesn't seem to recognise him, at least initially. There's sort of like a vague... I don't know whether she's being polite when she says, oh yeah, like, I do remember you. Or, you know, whether she was just, you know, she was being friendly or not. But Mark kind of goes, gets his book signed. And I thought it was interesting that he goes up, gets the signing, and then he hesitates, kind of typical Mark fashion. He doesn't, you know, he's not very forward. He hasn't got that confidence. And so many times we hear the line in Mark's head, something along the lines of like, this is my chance and I'm doing nothing. Like, I'm now this instant missing my chance. And kind of, you know, whether it's with Sophie or Dobby, whatever, he kind of just lets things slide and it all kind of falls apart. But this time he manages to kind of, even though he does walk away initially, he kind of, you know, he decides to get stuck in. He kind of takes control again, goes, you know what? I went to all the hassle of tracking her down through cyberspace. And so he kind of then cuts to the front of the queue again. He's like, no, you know what? Like, I'm here. I came here for you. Like, do you want to go out sometime? And I was pretty impressed by Mark, even though on the whole he's being pretty creepy. But I thought in terms of like his confidence and things, I thought that was quite noteworthy for Mark.
Yeah, and he is being creepy. Like, the whole situation with April right from series two was creepy. The fact, like he says in his internal monologue here, about the fact that he... bought some brogues off you and then stalked you 200 miles across the country and then lied about being a mature student. Like, all of that is mega creepy.
Yeah.
But then Googling her is even more creepy. But yeah, like, at this point, he doesn't know that she's married. Like, it's not stalking, it's intense liking, I think, is what he has referred to it as in the past. And I think, and we've had endless discussions about whether April was the one for Mark and whatever else, but this is the person he's always the most natural around, and they have this sort of like historical sort of banter that is just so bad, but so sweet. And even Mark coming up to the front and saying sorry to flout the queuing system like some syphilitic sultan, I'm like, he is at one with April, isn't he? He's just natural with her.
Yeah, totally agree with that. Far more than anyone else, even with, like, I'd say even with Dobby in the early days, really. I think Mark and April really share the kind of key, like, their true passions. Whereas Dobby was kind of like, she had a lot of kind of the geek things in common with Mark. But I think Mark's true passion is history, isn't it? And I think the fact that April kind of lives, breathes, writes all about it, I think that's have a shared passion like that, and the same sort of awkward tendencies as well. I think she's about as close to perfect as you can get, and unlike Dobby, who changed quite drastically over her time in Peep Show, it doesn't appear like April has changed all that much from the, you know, like, the girl that we met, like, from her university days.
No, and she's blossomed slightly in that she's obviously a bit more comfortable in her own skin, which I think Mark talks about later. And the fact that she's married now obviously sets a different precedent.
It does. But I do think that Mark has grown a little bit as well, but I think they're still close enough. Whereas Dobby kind of, you know, Mark said that she blossomed and she's kind of like completely changed. Whereas I think April is still much more on Mark's wavelength, even after all this time.
Yeah, 100%. So yeah, she sort of acknowledges that she knows him, but like I said, I don't know how, she's just saying that to be polite. And they have a sort of awkward, but sort of natural, I suppose, for them, back and forth. And we skip again, like, so we've literally gone back to back to back from Mark to Jez to Mark to Jez constantly in these first sort of 10 minutes of the episode. And we are back in Megan's flat, sort of just post-sex.
Yeah, so we arrive, yeah, in bed with Jez and Megan, and interestingly, Jez admits to her well, falsely admits, he says, I have to say this is the first time I've ever betrayed the ethics of my life coaching organisation, which I thought was good on multiple levels. The main one being, obviously, I think it's safe to say he's betrayed those ethics with basically everyone we've seen him coach, I think. And the second one, the fact that, you know, he's referring to a life coaching organisation when we know full well his qualifications are printed by Greg from British London and the whole thing is a farce. But I think I get this is the first time where he slept with a patient or client, whatever, however we're going to call them, probably client with life coaching. And it did get me thinking, like, Jez seems to think, well, we know kind of he's lying, but it just got me thinking about whether, you know, what's the worst thing Jez has done as a life coach in terms of, like, breaching the ethics of life coaching? Because I had a little look back, and I think we've got the... He was in love with Dobby, and he was sort of coaching her, trying to get information out of her. He ruined Neil's marriage, got him to kind of walk out on his wife. He beat the crap out of Big Mad Andy. And then shagged the boyfriend of a client, and now he's shagging the client. Like, the list is just extraordinary after quite few clients.
Yeah, I don't think the Big Mad Andy one is necessarily the worst. I think it's definitely between the... I think the Dobby one is quite bad because it's the first thing he does. The first, like, unethical thing that he does. By this point, it's kind of old hat. But this is definitely... This and the Neil one are definitely the most serious things that he's done. In terms of moral sort of corruption. But like he says, I don't know whether he says it in this scene or in this episode, he's like, I'm making my own work. Like, I'm just creating my own work here. By if I just keep sleeping with both of them, I'm keeping my business going.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? Yeah, it just, it never ceases to amaze me the way how Jeremy kind of stumbles his way through life. He kind of, you know, the giant's chicken shits its golden egg and it falls right in his lap. Like, it just seems to work for him. Somehow it manages to click. And it's an interesting one. Megan doesn't seem to care at all. She seems to have fairly flexible morals about the whole thing. And I thought it was interesting, you know, Megan's getting her life advice from this guy who is sleeping with the people he's supposed to be taking care of when they're vulnerable, saying ridiculous things. Like when she says, like, oh, well, we slept together, but it was outside of our coaching window. And Jez's response is like, yeah, I mean, well, I bet it's fine if football coaches have sex with their players, so long as it's outside the coaching window. It's like, seriously? Like, this is the guy? Like, these are the bits that come out of this guy's brain, and you're going to him to kind of get your life together?
But I think that's more symbolic of the fact that she really hasn't got her life together. Even though, arguably, she probably got her life together more than Jez has. She's obviously on the wave of, like, various dilemmas, whether it's her work, whether it's her relationship. Like, it's all coming out quite quickly. And she's obviously got some form of connection with Jez. Otherwise, she wouldn't have been sort of propositioning him at the end of her life coaching session. Like, I wonder whether she had that as, like, a motive the whole way through. Because, when I'm inviting him to stay for a glass of wine is obviously code for... she was going to end up sleeping with him. So I do wonder whether that was sort of in the pipeline for her all along.
Maybe. Yeah.
So whether she was in it for the life coaching or whether she was in it for the, I kind of fancy this sort of strange guy that I've met in a toilet.
I don't know. I think Jeremy certainly plays a role in making it happen because he's actively... You know, she's talking about being ready to commit to Joe, and he kind of steers her away from that, and kind of... He doesn't even say all that much discouraging about Joe, in fairness, but manages somehow to lead her that way. I'm not quite sure how that really happened, so I guess it's probably, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other, but somehow they manage to... You know, they end up hooking up, and you just know from this point now Jez is, you know, he's in both camps. It's only going to get messy from here.
Yeah, and boy, does it get messy. Well, it sort of gets messy and then gets clean again by the end of the episode. Like, kind of gets itself sorted, but we'll get to that when we get there. We jump yet again back to Mark and April, and they've gone from sort of vaguely recognising him at the book signing to then sort of sitting there after hours, as it were, with a glass of wine. They're staying in the bookshop. They've got a glass of wine each, and it's like they've never been apart.
Yeah, so they're sort of catching up. Mark's finding out all about what April does. Obviously, he knows that she's a writer now. So he's asking all about it. But it turns out that April is married. And not only that, he seems to be married to this great guy who kind of she works with. They write together. But at the same time, there's also this bit of resentment coming from April here. She's clearly frustrated about how there's this point of contention that she seems to do a lot of the work. And there, her husband is, who we later learn is Angus, is kind of getting quite a bit of the credit that perhaps she thinks is undeserved.
You skipped over quite a major part there where in his internal monologue, he says, like, I love you, April Danecroft, which obviously isn't a massive surprise to us. But the fact that he's saying it to himself and acknowledging that he's in love with her is quite a big deal. And he says something after, I think he says it after she makes a comment about, I'm like Indiana Jones, except without a whip and I ain't afraid of no snakes. And in his monologue, he just says, oh, an Indiana Jones reference mixed with a Ghostbusters reference. I love you, April Danecroft. And you're like, he's about to have his world torn apart when he realises she's married.
don't you think, though, like, this is a bit of a sort of callback to, like, Series 5, Mark, though, where he says he loves people after, like, 30 seconds? I think there's a little bit of that. I don't think we can really take Mark at his word at this point. Even he's gone to kind of extreme lengths to track her down, but I personally didn't, like, I don't believe him when he says that he loves her.
Do you not?
No. I don't think he can. To me, that kind of, like I say, it was more of a flashback to kind of Series 5 Desperate Mark, where we had, you know, the fallout of everything that happened with Sophie. Mark kind of just, he was a bit lost for a while, and everyone was the one. And I think he's kind of in a sort of mini version after, you know, the Dobby stuff finally resolved itself. I think, again, he's a bit lost, he's a little bit desperate, which is what has led him to kind of tracking April down. And he probably has this idea of April, you know, from 7 years ago, where she's perfect, even though they spent one day together. And I think she's kind of indicating that she's still sort of the same person. And I think he's really kind of clinging to that and running with it at 100 miles an hour in kind of typical Mark fashion. So I don't think he can really be in love with her. I think he's definitely infatuated by her, 100%. But I didn't really think of it as... I thought it was quite, you know, regular for Mark to say something like that.
That's really interesting. I've never thought about it like that. I've always just been like, Mark's at... Not at peace, but like he's found the person that he's looking for. And like when you say it like that and you do say, actually, he's only met her once... it's infatuation and it's what he's remembered in his head. And like you said, he's met her once. How can he be in love with her? It's like the Carla line, like, you hardly know me. How can you love me? You hardly know me. sorry for butchering that Geordie accent. But like, it's that same sort of thing. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I think April is probably the one for Mark. But I just think after, you know, so soon to say that he loves her, I think is, you know, it's far, far too soon. I think we definitely get there. But for now, I didn't read all that much into the internal declaration of love.
Fair enough. Fair enough. But she's quickly sort of spilling the beans about Angus and there being a little bit of resentment about the fact that she seems to do most of the work and he gets a lot of the credit for it. And she says to Mark, I'm sorry to be weird, but like, did anything happen between us when we were at Dartmouth? And Mark has to do this sort of like pretending sort of to go back through and be like, did anything happen? And he sort of says, yeah, we might have had one cuddle once, but that was about it as far as I recall.
This is the more interesting bit for me, is that April switches conversation quite abruptly. You know, they're talking about her career and her husband, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, the first thing they talk about in terms of like reminiscing or whatever was like, did we ever hook up? I found that an interesting like introduction to that conversation, and I was wondering whether, you know, you read anything into that, because I was a little bit unsure. Like, to me it seemed quite forward, like especially coming from someone like April, but like for that to be the first thing she says when they start looking back, like, did that surprise you?
I suppose it did, in the sense of, yeah, it was quite a forward thing to say, but I can't imagine that April was somebody who had a university life full of hookups, judging from the character she was when we met her at university. So I would presume that she's like, I want to get this. Actually, to be fair, at this point, she's never really got any intention of seeing Mark again, has she? So it's a weird conversation to bring up. But you would have thought that she would have remembered. She wouldn't need to ask that. I know it happened like, whatever, 12, 13 years before this episode, but you would have thought that if you saw somebody who basically looks the same as they did 12 years ago, and I know they didn't sleep together, they just sort of had a bit of a cuddle and a kiss and that was it, but he stayed the night, didn't he?
No, they leave in the end, don't they? Oh, no, did they?
No, they do.
No,
they
think,
do.
No, you do. Yeah, they do stay. Yeah, you do stay the night.
Nothing happens, yeah. But he shares the bed with her. And I would imagine, like I said, I might be doing her a disservice, but I can't imagine that she had tons of hookups at uni, and therefore you'd remember this particular one. Like, I can sympathise with that. Like, I didn't hook up with a ton of people at uni. If I saw somebody, I finished uni like 10 years ago. If I saw somebody that I knew that I did hook up with or like kissed at uni, I would remember them. Like, I would remember that I hooked up with that person.
Yeah, especially as they weren't hammered or anything. They were sober, as far as I can remember. They kind of went to that weird party. But yeah, I was surprised that April didn't remember Mark. But I guess it was quite a long time ago for someone you met once. Maybe it's quite plausible that she wouldn't remember. If she doesn't, you know, we know Mark is, quote, replaying it in his head nightly. Perhaps April just kind of moved on, I guess. But I thought it was interesting that she kind of dove straight into the, like, oh, did we hook up? As, like, the first point of conversation about their history. I just thought that was quite an interesting choice, and I given that she's just been complaining, well, not directly, but kind of implying that she's annoyed a bit about the relationship with her husband, I just thought it was interesting that she then started asking about whether they'd hooked up previously.
Yeah, and I mean, I didn't really answer your question when you asked me, so I do apologize. Yeah, I suppose it is slightly strange, but Mark then goes one step further, and after this sort of awkward conversation they've had about whether they did hook up.
Look, it was so great to see you again. I better go. Angus waits.
She's leaving again. Come on, Mark, pull your dick from the stone.
As a matter of fact, I'm having a dinner party tomorrow night. Ridiculously short notice, I know, but...
Well, I'm free tomorrow. Although Angus is going to a conference.
Well, why don't you come on your own? It's not like you're chained together, or are you?
Not last time I checked. Clank, clank.
Tomorrow. It's a date. I mean, that is the date on which it shall happen.
Great.
Yes, Olympus has fallen. Now all I have to do is cook a meal so delicious she will make love to me, such as cheesy pasta.
I was actually quite impressed with how Mark plays this. I think he manages to play it pretty cool. Like, even though his monologue is kind of screaming the exact opposite of what he's saying out loud, I thought it was... You know, the way he managed to, you know, ask her for a glass of wine, quite kept it quite casual. When she asked him about their history, the way he kind of, like, faked, you know, having to roll the years back to kind of remember, I thought he managed to do an okay job of and kind of play it down. And then inviting her to dinner, I think Mark was behaving kind of like a normal human being, which is quite rare to see, so I had to kind of give Mark credit for that. And yeah, the way he kind of is like, oh yeah, don't worry about you. They share a bit of a joke, don't they? And it's like, oh, well, he's not chained to you, is she? And she does that like, oh, not that I know of, clank, clank. And again, you're getting that sense like, yeah, these guys haven't really changed since they last met. The chemistry is kind of instant again.
Yeah, and I think that just aids or further supports Mark's theory that she is the one and that he is in love with her and all of this sort of stuff. And he heads back to the flat to start preparing his fine cuisine.
I thought it was interesting that Mark was putting in quite a lot of effort here. Like, I didn't really have him down as a whiz in the kitchen. Like, we've seen him kind of, you know, making toast and things. But there's references to, you know, like, microwave pizzas and lots of takeaways and things. To see him making his own pasta, I thought... Like, well, that's not like rocket science or anything, but I thought it was a step further than most people go to, and it kind of surprised me that Mark kind of knew what he was doing there.
Well, we've seen him do cooking before, haven't we? We've seen him, he made like 4 different lasagnas for the party in Series 7.
Yeah, but I presume that he didn't make all of that, like the lasagna from... Like the pasta sheets from scratch and things. He's kind of really pushing the boat out. Like, I've never made pasta before.
No, I haven't.
I kind of had myself at like a, I imagine, not that I'm any, like, I'm not a chef or anything like fancy at all. I cook quite basically, but I don't know, just in my head, I thought I was probably more advanced than Mark. So to see him making his own pasta and having, like, even having the gear to do that, I just thought that was quite surprising that he was putting in that level of effort and kind of had it in him to do it.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah, I also have never made my own pasta. My food GCSE, my food technology GCSE has never led me onto those great heights.
Support for podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs is brought to you by Manscaped, the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision engineered tools for your family jewels, and Manscaped just launched their 4th generation trimmer, the Lawnmower 4.0, all across Europe. You heard that right, the 4.0. Join over 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code PEEP at manscaped.com. So why do you need Manscaped's Lawnmower 4.0? Well, we've all got our own nightmare grooming stories about shaving our nether regions. Whether it's nicks, cuts and grazes, or an unfortunate tale involving hair removal cream, it can seem like you're always a moment away from disaster. Not with the Lawnmower 4.0. After using it myself, it really does make a massive difference. It's quick, easy to use, and most importantly, I felt safe while using it. With the Lawnmower 4.0, Manscaped have engineered the ultimate groin trimmer, with their advanced skin-safe technology making you confident to shave your boys. So, if you're like Mark and are worried about your testicles looking abnormal, the Lawnmower 4.0 can give you the confidence to do something about it and make your balls feel like $1 million. So go on, start shaving your testicles like it's the most natural thing in the world, and get 20% off and free shipping with the code PEEP at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com and use code PEEP. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. Your balls will thank you.
Mark is sort of filling Jeremy in on what the plan is.
April from Darty's coming over, as it happens.
The girl from the shoe shop. You finally tracked her down and you're luring her back to your lair to eat her with pasta.
It isn't a lair, it's my flat. And my sole subterfuge is that she thinks she's coming to a dinner party, but I've got a feeling that the other guests may cancel at the last minute. Naughty, unreliable guests.
Finally, I'm rubbing off on you.
Jez, I think she might actually be my perfect woman. She's a serious academic historian who got my joke about Indiana Jones. She just texted saying, Professor Jones has her whip ready. I think it's probably the sexiest text anyone has ever received.
Which I can imagine for Mark, even though there's no sort of sexual meaning behind it from April's part, well, I don't think there is anyway, Mark is like, oh my God, like this is meaning something, this is meaning something, when it's clearly not.
I think that's a little bit kind of saucy.
I think it's just a bit of innocent flirty banter without it really meaning anything, like... Where you can have, like, platonic flirting, I suppose.
Yeah. But I think for Mark, that probably is the, you know, the sexiest thing that anyone's ever sent him. Like, Mark's not a flirt, is he? So I think even, like, fairly innocent flirting... And I just remember, she's married. She shouldn't really be flirting about whips with anyone. So I think for Mark, this is, like, the peak, isn't it? This is hot and steamy.
Yeah, very true. His idea of flirting was to send, like, Nazi symbol cartoons to Sophie.
Exactly. Yeah, that's not even remotely close to, like, proper flirting. But here we go. We've got April coming in, bringing a whip with her. I think there's definitely something in that. But yeah, you're right. Jez kind of wants to turn the heat up in response. And his idea of writing I love you across Mark's eyelids, quite a left field move, in my opinion.
But it doesn't take Mark long to break down and let Jez do it, which I find quite funny.
You should go the full indie. I love you on the eyelids.
Brilliant. But far too mad.
Go on, it'll be hilarious.
I was thinking, how can I turn up the heat? I could blink at her as she came through the door.
More than hilarious. It'll be a hoot.
It would be a bit of a hoot, wouldn't it? But it's the sort of thing you'd think about but never actually do.
Not on my watch. Come on, you've tracked down the love of your life. Go for it.
No, Jez!
Yes, Mark. This is what real friends are for. Making you do brilliant things that you'd never do otherwise. This is how the old Do brothers roll.
God!
Right then, hold still. Come on, Mark.
Oh, this is crazy. You're mental!
He is laughing like an insane man, isn't he? I don't think we've ever heard Mark laugh like this before. It was almost unsettling.
Yeah, and he has the words written on his eyelids, and then it takes him less than a second to go, oh my God, what have I done? I haven't finished pureeing the chickpeas. Like, why have I let you do this to me? And he's immediately regretting act of spontaneity before fully finishing act of spontaneity. But to add to a stressful situation, Megan then arrives at the door.
Yeah, and of course we quickly realise that Jo is currently in Jez's bedroom, and here she is wandering into the hall unannounced. We weren't expecting her at all. And Jo emerges from Jez's bedroom with no socks on, and he's kind of doing up his top button. And... do you think that, like, the only reason Megan holds back is because, as far as she's concerned, like, both Jeremy and Joe are straight in her eyes? Because obviously she slept with both of them. But to me, it's probably because, like, we know everything as an audience. But to me, it still screams something dodgy going on if he's barefoot and doing up his shirt coming out of a bedroom.
But... she knows that Jeremy does life coaching in unusual places, and she also knows that he is a life coach. So there are two reasons that that would be... I mean, the idea that he's got no socks on is bizarre.
It's weird. But he specifically says that he's not here for life coaching. Megan thinks he is, but he says, no, this is just two coincidental friendly visits.
Yeah, I mean, that's stupid on Jeremy's part, isn't it? Because I think Joe would probably have just said, I'm here for life coaching. Because it's Jeremy that denies it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a strange one. Like, if I was in this situation and I saw my wife coming out of somebody's bedroom of the same sex without her socks on and doing her, like, her blouse up or whatever, my immediate thought wouldn't be, she's sleeping with that person.
No, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I think she should be more suspicious than she is, though. She's clearly, like, puzzled by it, but she seems to kind of brush it off fairly quickly and not really ask too many questions, which I just thought was a bit odd.
And he looks shifty as hell as well.
Yeah, and Jez is as well, the way he's trying to... like, they are all, like... you know, exchanging, you know, funny looks, and this, yeah, it's all very, very odd. And I think Megan kind of, whether she's holding back or whether she's not really clocking on, I don't know. It's hard to really say, isn't it? Because, like I said, as an audience, we know everything, so it looks really, really bad to us. But if all she's known is that Jeremy and Joe are straight, then the idea that they're sleeping together probably, you know, it probably does sound ridiculous.
And also, she can't be too suspicious and arouse too much suspicion because she's coming round, presumably, to shag Jez as well.
Mm. Yeah.
So she doesn't want to come in and go all guns blazing and then Joe be like, hang on, why are you here? Although there's more of a justifiable reason because he knows that she's having life coaching. But even so...
Yeah, so I do think she could go in a little bit more.
But maybe she's not ready to take the moral high ground because she does know that she's about to have sex with Jeremy. Or she was about to before she realised that her boyfriend was currently there.
Mm.
But then rather than leaving, both of them leaving, they both stay.
Yeah, you'd think you'd be out there, like Joe, you'd think, would be out there in a flash, wouldn't you? He'd be like, oh, I'll leave you two to it. You're clearly here for a coaching session or something. Even if she's not, like, you would just kind of get out of there, I think.
Yeah, so Jeremy's trying to work out how he can get out of the situation and he flicks a lighter as he walks past me, like, could I set fire to
I the love place? That moment. Yeah, I think that's brilliant. The way he's thinking about it and then goes into the kitchen and Mark's kind of just like talking at him, isn't he, about like what he's doing for this meal when Jez isn't really listening and we see the sparking of the lighters and he's kind of thinking in his head, like we don't even have his monologue but we know exactly what he's thinking, like yeah, or well, maybe not, and puts it down and kind of shrugs his shoulders. I think it's brilliant.
Yeah, like you said, whilst Mark's going through his monologue, Mark's speaking out loud, Jeremy's going through his monologue like, What can I do to get out of this situation? Yeah, why don't I suggest a run? That's it, a lovely three-person run. And he starts putting on his trainers to go back through. And Mark's phone makes him realise this is April, and she's saying to Mark, like, Angus isn't going away anymore, so is it all right if we both come? And Mark's like, oh, blah, no problem, amigo. And his plan is just falling apart.
Yeah, Mark's kind of... He's caught over a barrel, isn't he, here? And he's trapped by... You know, Angus coming along, it kind of throws the whole plan to be like, ooh, whoopsie, like the other guests cancelled at the last minute. Like, isn't that unfortunate that we're alone together? Now he's like, shit, I need to find some additional guests very, very quickly. Oh, hang on a minute. And yes, effectively traps Jez in his worst nightmare at this point because Joe and Megan are kind of the nearest... I think he refers to them as mannequins, doesn't he? Drag the mannequins in, like they're thankfully his lifeline, but he doesn't really know what he's signing himself up for.
No, and here starts... I think this is the start of the great sort of second half of this episode. I think this is where it really comes into its own. Right from this point where Mark is frantically panicking, he's like,
Angus is coming. April's husband.
You didn't mention the husband, you dark, filthy, dirty horse.
Yes, well, she's got a husband, and in 30 minutes, he'll want some dinner. I need to bulk out. Lettuce.
Bulky lettuce.
They'll bring wine, but we need booze. Where's the rum? Get the rum, make a cocktail.
What cocktail?
Any fucking thing. Rum and water, rum and milk, chop some parsley into it. They're all basically horrible. It's action stations. Fuck! How quickly can you get to Mr. Patel's and back?
Mr. Patel's? Austerity cornflakes and Latvian feta? Look, here we go. Beans. Everyone likes beans.
I can't serve baked beans.
Beans are pasta sauce.
Beans are not pasta sauce.
They're tomato-y.
Ketchup is tomato-y. That's not a pasta sauce.
It is when I make pasta. What the hell are you doing?
I'm picking the beans out.
With your disgusting human fingers?
Mashed. I can mash them. Right, we're getting somewhere. Cooking's all about confidence. I'm just going to mix it all together. I need to go Nigella. I'm going to be the hairy biker.
That's not Nigella. That's not even Ainsley, mate.
Maybe some of the, you know, the reasoning that people don't like this episode perhaps starts here as it very quickly gets very mad.
Yeah, but I've said, I think that's part of the beauty of it. Like, it's farcical and slapstick. And I think that's so unlike some of the other episodes of Peep Show. I think that's why it's great.
Yeah, exactly. And this episode is... partly great because it is kind of just stumbling from one disaster to the next, isn't it? I think of it as like Mark can't catch a break from this point onwards. It's kind of like he's trying to put out a fire, but when he thinks he's, you know, reaching for a bucket of water, it's just like a tank of petrol instead, and it just gets worse and worse because he's then realizing he's not only, you know, Angus is arriving crap, then he's got to sort out the food, scale it up, Then he remembers, oh crap, I've written I love you across my bloody eyes. Like, what am I going to do about that? He's trying to frantically scrub at them, but we learn that Jez has done it in permanent marker. And so he decides, as the door is knocking in a panic, he's just, right, well, I can't blink for the rest of the evening. And so in they come, and we get this kind of wild-eyed Mark. Like, when you look at him here, he's almost trying too hard, because he looks really unnatural the way his eyes are just kind of like bulging out, and he's desperately trying to find a way to be able to like, he takes their coats and he allowing him to turn for a second so he can, you know, get a moment's respite, as he probably gets about 10 blinks in the space of 3 seconds.
Almost unbearable urge to blink. Lovely, lovely blink. Enjoy it. Last one of the night.
Shall we go through? Help yourself to hummus. It's freshly made and, if I say so myself, quite delicious.
Unlike the rest of the meal.
Cocktail?
Rum, water, lettuce, vinegar, and the secret ingredient, salt. Oh, look who's won the lettuce lottery.
Wow, this is some...
It's Moroccan. I love it. It's quite subtle.
Blink impulse off the scale and drink disgusting.
He doesn't really have a long-term plan here, does he? It's almost easier if he just sort of owns it. Like, just come up with a stupid story and he'd be fine.
I think so. It'd be less... He's just going on instinct now, isn't he? But he's making all the wrong decisions. And I think he could just say, like, oh, the casserole burnt, so... how about we get a Chinese or something? And they just kind of like, yeah, sure, that's very disappointing for all the people that have come expecting a dinner party. But at least he's then not serving something truly horrific. Is, you know, all of this stuff with the drink as well, the guests, it's all just, it's one thing after another, isn't it? And I think, yeah, maybe if he just kind of owned up to it. I think he could kind of... he wouldn't have to explain that it was all a ruse just to get alone with April. I think he could leave that bit out. But the way, like I say, it just degenerates so badly. And while it's fantastic to watch, I think maybe if Mark had a slightly cooler head, he could have avoided a lot of this.
Yeah, and everything he is serving them, like you said, is just absolutely terrible. He asks Angus to pour himself a cocktail, and Angus sort of goes, no, what is this? Is this lettuce?
Yeah. There's that great bit where a bit of lettuce kind of just goes into Angus's mouth in the first sip, and his face is just absolutely priceless, bless him. But that sort of typical English reserve, I like his excuse, is like, oh, I'm gonna go slow tonight and let your other guests like have a chance to enjoy it or something. I thought that was very good.
So once they've got the drinks out of the way and everyone's sort of seated, Mark brings, how do we describe this meal? I've got it paused on the point at which he serves it on the table, and I'm just going to list what I can see. I can see some toast around the outside. I can see, is it tagliatelle? I can see eggs. I can see some lettuce leaves, and presumably mixed in within it, there are like baked beans. This is not a meal.
I think this is perhaps where, now I'm reflecting on it a bit more, it does start to unravel a little bit, but I think it's so funny that I kind of don't care. But it also doesn't help that Angus and April didn't bring any wine with them, thinking that they were being helpful, because everyone brings wine, they say. They bring chocolate, which is, of course, totally useless to Mark. So he's short on wine, he's short on food. And I didn't really take too close a look at the what was actually served up kind of on the various plates. This is a total shit show, isn't it?
Serve up, move on.
Do dig in.
What is it?
It's Moroccan, like my eyeshadow.
It tastes like baked beans on spaghetti with lettuce.
Well, I'd hate to call you a racist at my dinner party, but I think it's a little more sophisticated than that. It's from the Atlas Mountains.
He's really buying into this bullshit that he's creating himself. It's very, very bizarre. Yeah, we hadn't really touched on the fact that it's all Moroccan. He's claiming his eyeshadow is Moroccan, the cocktail is Moroccan. He's certainly trying to create this ruse that nobody's really buying. I think that's the thing, is people dislike this episode because it's farcical and because it's unrealistic. But actually, that's part of what's making it funny. Like, Mark is down the rabbit hole. Like, he's panicking, he's having to swing and miss at all these various things. Like, he's doing it unrealistically. He's not trying to claim that this is all meant to be part of his plan. Like, it's meant to be stupid.
Yeah, totally. I think we spoke to Sam Bain. He mentioned something that he was told, and it's this idea that, you know, a good sitcom is where you chase your characters up a tree and then you throw stones at them, and you put them in a ridiculous, you know, you back them into a corner, and then, yeah, you poke them with a stick or whatever, and you see what happens. It leads to extreme events. And I think this is a case of that, where, you know, like I said earlier, Mark's kind of fighting on instinct here. He's just kind of lurching from one disaster to the next. And Jez is in quite quickly in the same boat. And then it's the way that these two series of events then come together and they become, you know, quite, you know, tightly linked. The fact that they're all in this together and they've all got their own secrets that then start to kind of unravel. I think it's really well put together in the end, even though I think if it wasn't put together well in that sense and you had all this ridiculous stuff going on, I think, yeah, I probably wouldn't enjoy it anywhere near as much. But I think it's grounded in a different kind of sense, if you get what I mean. Like, there's a lot else that's kind of tying it all together, so you can kind of get a bit wilder with the rest of it.
Ooh, hello. Naughty, naughty Megan. Am I betraying Joe or Megan more? I like him loads, but I'm her life coach.
What the fuck? Joe?
No, don't cross the streams.
Shit.
What the hell?
That was actually Mark's foot. He does that sometimes, for laughs.
What?
Put your foot in my groin under the table.
No, I don't.
Mark's got his shoes on.
He's quick. He slips them on and off. It's part of our flirty, dirty game.
I have no idea what he's talking about. There goes a valuable glassful.
What's going on?
What's going on? My boyfriend is fucking my life coach.
The angle that Joe must be at, I was looking at this from a distance, the angle that Joe must be at to get his foot up there is actually quite impressive.
This isn't Joe's first time, clearly. Yeah, there's definitely some sort of cross-leggedness going on here to get there.
But it's interesting that she throws the wine at Jez and not at Joe. Like, she's having an affair with Jeremy. Joe's her boyfriend. Like, you would have thought that he'd have borne the brunt of the wine throwing.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I suppose, yeah, she's in a relationship with Joe, so there's that sort of, yeah, he's kind of broken that trust. But I guess, Jez is supposed to be the one that is kind of, you know, he's life coaching her, so I guess there's a double breach there. Yeah, it's a tricky one.
I'd be more annoyed with Joe than I would be with Jeremy, because, like, ultimately, you know that Jeremy is slightly duplicitous because you know that he's sleeping with you despite being your life coach, and he knows you've got a boyfriend.
Yeah.
Like, moral standings from Jeremy are non-existent. I'd be more pissed off if I was Megan that my boyfriend was sleeping with my life coach. And not only sleeping with my life coach, that he was sleeping with his male life coach. Like, it's not that the fact that he's cheating on you, it's the fact he's also cheating on you with another guy.
Yeah, and he's hidden that from her as well, presumably. We're not quite sure whether we don't really know if Joe was openly bi before he hooked up with Jez. So maybe that isn't so much of a revelation. That bit's unclear. But as far as Megan knows, Jez was straight. Yeah, it's a bit of a complicated one. I guess maybe you should just, on instinct, yeah, I don't know. But you're right, that is interesting, actually. She probably should be madder at Joe because the betrayal is deeper there.
Yeah, but each to their own, I guess. And Mark forces Jeremy to go out and check if things are right with him as they go scurrying out of the room. And it's left with Mark, Angus and April sitting at the table. And the stress obviously got to April because she's like, oh, I need a cigarette. Has anyone got a cigarette? And they have this uncomfortable sort of... It's not really a domestic at this point.
I need a cigarette. Has anyone got a cigarette?
I thought you'd given up.
I thought things, you thought things. Turns out people can surprise you.
Hello?
Go on, fine. Choke yourself.
At least I tell you when I'm breaking a promise.
Stop actually rubbing my hands.
Sorry, it's just a bit of a flashback to Corfu.
Corfu?
It's nothing. Not nothing. When we were in Corfu last summer, we had a little relationship trouble.
I'm sure all's well now. I don't want to pry. Weedle, weedle, pry and needle.
We've had counselling, we've dealt with the issues, we've moved on.
But the wounds are still there.
That can happen with wounds. It can be good to give them a good inspection now and again.
As a penance, I went to live with the monks on Mount Athos for 3 months.
10 weeks.
10 weeks, whatever.
Apparently, he lived on nothing but dry bread and goat milk. But when I picked him up, there were a lot of Nutella jars in his recycling.
I know, and I'm sorry. I can be weak.
Weak? How exactly, Angus?
You don't have to achieve sainthood. Just try not to fuck anyone else.
This is amazing. So uncomfortable. This could be my night of greatest triumph.
He's reveling in the fact that, you know, all of this stuff is coming out. And it's, you know, this is absolute gold to him. Like any, you know, chink in the armor, like something that he can kind of niggle at and potentially, you know, wear their relationship down. But interestingly, before we know it, the love triangle kind of return as quickly as they stormed off, don't they?
Yeah, so they come back in and they seem to have some sort of solution to their problem. And I don't think it's the solution that necessarily... I say we weren't expecting, but it's certainly not a conventional solution.
Well, it's interesting that earlier, Jez says to Mark, we didn't cover this earlier, actually, that he says... like, he reveals to Mark that he's sleeping with them both and says, like, but actually, you know, if they find out about each other, like, they can't be that mad because, like, they're both as bad as each other.
Yeah, and that was kind of what I said earlier about the fact that Megan couldn't really hold the moral high ground coming in and worrying why Joe was there when she knew that she was over there to do the same thing. But yeah, they reveal that they are going to move forward as a three. But yeah, they reveal they've got some guidelines that they have to follow, which I tried to pause on to see if I could read any of them. But Jez is holding it a little too far away for us to be able to read it.
I did exactly the same thing. I tried zooming in and doing all sorts. I had no luck at all. I couldn't decipher any of it.
No, so they've obviously got their guidelines. And we do hear a couple of them a little bit later on where there's a bit of tension between them. But April and Angus sort of recognise, they're like, well, we're glad that you're all moving forward in a sort of mature way, which again opens up another wound as April storms off. It's like, is that what you want? And it's just all getting a bit too much for April.
She storms off, which is, of course, like fantastic news for Mark as he turns to Angus and thinks to himself, like, oh, Angus, you just can't seem to say the right thing, you lovely asshole. And so Mark quickly follows up April into his bedroom to kind of beat Angus to the punch. And interestingly, she starts apologising. And I was thinking that, you know, she's probably been the most sane one there that evening.
But she's also very aware that she is embarrassing, or like she's ruining, well, if that's what's ruining the dinner party, then I'm not really sure, like, she's got her moral compass particularly correct. But
yeah, exactly.
She's quite an awkward person. I think she'd be very aware that any sort of, like, negative vibes from her and Angus...
Yeah.
It's a very different situation from the Joe, Megan and Jeremy thing, because I think they're also self-centred and so, like, immature about things that actually they're not really aware of how much their drama is impacting on the rest of their guests, whereas I think April is acutely aware of that.
No, very right, very true.
So Mark goes through and says, like, I can take a message back to Angus, but he says in his monologue, you may have picked a rather corrupt postman. and I just think, yeah, this is like Jez when he has to take the message between Nancy and Matt Townsend, and he just absolutely screws them over.
We knew that Mark was going to meddle and take. Now he's spotted there's weakness. He can kind of smell blood, can't he? Like, he was always, like, there was never a moment, like, where we thought he would actually honestly kind of and accurately deliver these messages. He was going to do anything he could to kind of muddy the water as much as he could here.
Yeah, 100%. And muddying waters is perhaps a slightly apt term for the next scene, where we go back into the front room and Joe, Megan and Jeremy are trying to work out their plans. And
okay, I mean, this is very exciting, but I might need to make a move home, so, Joe?
Oh, I thought Joe was staying here tonight, according to the guidelines.
No, it's Saturday, so it's a Joe and Megan night.
Right, but you spent last night together. On no two consecutive nights shall, etc, etc.
Yeah, but you two already fucked today. It's my time for a girl and Joe.
Oh, okay. Well, then, yeah, I mean, I guess it's up to Joe, is it? Is there a rule for...
Oh, this is fucking bullshit.
Why did you have to sleep with her?
I'm right here.
Oh, everything was all right when you were humping two people, but when I started, that's not allowed.
No, no, you knew we were humping when we humped. You kept Megan a secret because you like her more than me. Admit it.
No, I won't fucking admit it because it's not true.
Jez and Joe actually come to sort of, not like blows, but it gets physical, doesn't it? They shove each other, and before you know it, they're kind of shoving and wrestling each other to the floor. And when Megan kind of gets up and thinks to herself, like, oh, this is all ridiculous, like, boys, what are they like? Kind of, I never asked anyone to fight over me, only for Mark to come back in and go, yeah, I don't really think they're fighting anymore. And the camera just kind of looks past Megan and we can see them kind of humping on the lounge carpet, which leads Megan to just kind of storm out. She's had enough of this whole evening. It's been a disaster from start to finish. And so we kind of are just left with Jez and Joe canoodling on the carpet while Mark is left with Angus.
Yeah, having a really sort of serious conversation, and he goes back out and he just outright lies to Angus, doesn't he? And he sort of says, she loves you, but she says that she doesn't want to speak to you. Oh no, she says she loves you, but she's not sure she likes you, is what she says. And
yeah,
just think,
and worse than that, even when he is delivering messages from Angus to her, he says, is it like he loves you, but he doesn't know if he respects you? And it's like, ooh, and that moment, that's when Angus kind of walks in on that. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I was just saying like what you wanted me to. And before, you know, we get 2D, April is basically saying that she wants to leave, which leaves poor Angus stranded to stay at Mark's flat.
Yeah, which is what one of the listeners sort of alluded to as being slightly bizarre.
Yeah, given that they've known each other for all of like a couple of hours, you're right. I hadn't really thought too much about that, but I suppose April kind of doesn't really leave him with all that much choice. I suppose he could go to a hotel, but yeah, it seems like Angus has been through the ringer tonight, and yeah, we're kind of left finishing the episode with him kind of wanting to talk about love and man and all these deep conversations, whereas Mark's just kind of like, oh, for God's sake, why am I stuck with you? I want to sleep with your wife.
Yeah, whilst they're watching Joe and Jeremy slowly, gently hump in the corner.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the more bizarre endings to an episode, and there's been quite a few of those.
Absolutely.
Fancy a punt on the quizzy? Shit a bit of data out of that bunged up brain box. I'll do the buttons, do the answers.
Okay, so we've got our third quiz of the series here. Are you ready?
Yeah. There's a lot to have digested in this quiz, so I'm not sure how confident I'm feeling, but let's go for it. Let's see how we do. How many questions am I up against?
Gone for the usual 10.
Okay.
There was quite a bit in there, but I think you're going to do well. You've got a decent record in these quizzes, so I'm expecting a strong performance without putting too much pressure on you.
Okay, let's go for it.
Okay, so question one. What does Jeremy compare sex with other men to?
Like getting your car serviced at the dealership.
Yeah. Number two, where should Mark forward Jeremy's post?
Oh my God, I talked about this earlier. Is it just Blowjob City?
Correct. Number three, what's April's book about?
It is about the... Oh, flipping heck. Again, this is something I said. It's something about the Ottoman Empire.
Yep, the Ottoman Empire, correct. What is Mark's rehearsed chat-up line for April? So when he's going into the book signing, he's kind of practicing a line.
Hi, I'm Jez. How's it handling? Hi, I'm Robert Grayson. Pleased to meet you. No, I've got absolutely no idea.
It's, we studied ancient history at Dartmouth, but that's all ancient history now.
Oh, of course. I should have just taken a stab at that.
Number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. What were Mark and April's nicknames at school?
So April was Joan of Snark and Mark was the sick man of Europe.
Correct. Number 6. What meal does Mark think will make April sleep with him?
Cheesy pasta.
Correct. What's the sexiest text ever received? I need it exactly.
Dr. Jones has her whip ready.
It's Professor Jones has her whip ready.
Dr. Jones, Dr.
Very, very
Jones.
Close.
Oh my God.
Next one. What's Mark's cocktail made of? So I need all the ingredients.
Lettuce.
Yeah.
Rum.
Mm-hmm.
And water?
Yeah, there are two other ingredients.
Are they liquid-based ingredients, or...?
one of them is.
Rum, water, and... Oh, one of them's salt.
Yeah, that's the secret ingredient.
Yeah, and rum, water, and... Oh, my God. It's not like vinegar or something, is it?
It is vinegar.
Oh,
yes,
my God.
Correct.
That was a,
well,
that was an absolute guess.
What did Angus do as a penance for his infidelity?
He went to stay with the monks on Mount... Is it Mount Athos?
It was, but I need a little bit more from you. So, stayed with the monks on Mount Athos for...
Well, he says it was for 3 months, and then April corrects him and says it was for 10 weeks.
Yes, 10 weeks, that's what I needed. Very good. And then finally, as a sort of impossible one, you did mention it, but I'm going to have to get it from you from memory. What's the title of April's book?
Oh, for God's sake.
I left this one to last because I knew it would be basically impossible. I know you like to throw me a real curveball.
I literally said it in the actual
episode. You did, but it's so long, I'll be amazed if you remember it.
I had it... Oh, it's like... It's something... The second half of it... Do I need the whole thing?
Yeah, I won the whole thing.
Oh, God, the second half of it is...
It's designed for you to get wrong, so don't feel pressure.
The second half of it is about the Christian invasion of the Ottoman Empire, but I can't think what the first part is.
Yeah, I'll give you a half point for that, because you've got about half the words. So it's The Conversion of Constantinople, A History of the Christian Invasion of the Ottoman Empire. So I'll give you a half point for that, because you've got... A fair amount, so well done. That was designed to trip you up. But when you said it earlier, I thought, oh, damn it, you might remember it. But thankfully you didn't. So, but on the whole, very good performance there. I think that leaves you... so you didn't get the chat-up line.
I didn't get the text one.
So you got 7.5 out of 10. That's a solid performance.
Especially yeah, those,
with that last curveball.
That text one is harsh as well. I know I got one of the words wrong, but that's brutal.
Yeah, well, I had to be very precise, especially as you said it earlier. I thought I'm going to have to be picky. But 7.5, that's very, very good. So well done for that one. And that leads us to the end of the episode then. So we're wrapping up episode 3 of series 9. So thank you very much if you've made it all the way to the end with us. If you've enjoyed the show, I'm going to keep banging the drum. Like, if you could leave us a review, especially if you're a long time listener. I've noticed in the last week or two we've had a few new reviews, which is lovely to see. So if you can help us out and leave us a review if you haven't, then that really does help kind of promote the show in the iTunes charts and things. So yeah, that would be great. You can join us next week then for episode 4. We are, we're hurtling towards the end of Peep Show now, which is a shame. But episode 4 of series 9 is called Mole Mapping. So you can join us next week for that, as Mark kind of is really going to kind of desperate lengths to spend time with April. But it'd be nice to kind of explore that more, and it's a great, I didn't mention it earlier, but it's great to kind of have April back after all that time. It's kind of like when Big Mad Andy came back, isn't it? It comes out of absolutely nowhere, but April is, she's even better than she was back then. So it's it's a nice return. As we're at the end, do you want to let everyone know how they can get in touch with us, Rob?
Yes, so you can find us on Facebook by searching Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs, on Twitter at Podcast Pharaohs, Instagram at Podcast Secrets of the Pharaohs, and if you want to find us on email, If you want to send us an email, you can find us by podcastsecretsofthepharaohs@gmail.com.
Perfect. And you heard us shout out our wonderful patrons at the top of the episode. I want to thank all of them once again. If you are interested in joining our lovely patrons, you can find a link to that in the episode description. There are various, reward tiers and things. And you can also find a number of exclusive episodes. They're all there if you sign up at any tier. Any final thoughts before we head out, Rob?
No, I want to say thank you to everyone for their thoughts on this episode. We've given a lot of the fan opinions. There were, like I said, hundreds of people got in touch to let us know what they thought of Threeism. So thank you to everyone who did get in touch to share their opinions. I disagree with quite a lot of them, but that's what makes Peep Show so great, is it has such a wide range of thoughts. And Threeism has always been one of our favourite episodes. And I always enjoy hearing what other people think. So yeah, shout out to everyone who's got in touch, and I look forward to mole mapping.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's worth mentioning is the fact that just because we really like this episode, it is interesting to hear why some people thought, like one person said it was one of their least favourites out of the whole run. Which
there was quite a few people who said they really actively dislike this episode.
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, that is literally why we do this podcast, is to kind of find, other people's views and discuss them, and it's all just kind of having that conversation. So just while I don't like sectioning and streaming, which are some people's favourites, I happen to like Threeism and other people don't. So yeah, this is why we do the show. So if you want to share any more thoughts, then, hit us up on all those channels that Rob just mentioned, and we can kind of continue the conversation because it's an interesting one.
I like Threeism, and if you can't handle it, you can just fuck off.
Precisely. So, what a note to end it on. We will wrap things up there. So, thank you very much for listening, everyone. And as always, thank you for joining me, Rob.
I must stop actually rubbing my hands.